It's time for Ask Patty, Automotive Advice for Women, with Jody DeVere, founder of AskPatty.com. Now here's Jody DeVere and her guest.
Welcome, everyone, to our May Ask Patty Automotive Advice for Women radio show. I have a super special guest with us this month to celebrate moms and cars. Her name is Mary Lou Quinlan, and she is the CEO of Just Ask a Woman and also the author of the newly released bestseller, I call it, The God Box. Welcome, Mary Lou. I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jody. It's great to be here.
So our listeners can get to know you better, why don't you talk a little bit about your background and what led up to this book that, you know, I had the great pleasure of watching you reenact the book at the Marketing to Women conference recently, which literally left not a dry eye in the house. So let's hear a little bit about you and what led up to the writing of the book.
Well, sure. I'm a marketer and a business person by trade. I've spent a lot of years in the advertising business, and I've had my own company, Just Ask a Woman, where I have advised lots of companies on what women want, including General Motors. And I've done that for the last 13 years, but all those years of interviewing thousands of women, and I wrote for magazines like More and Real Simple and O, and I've been on TV about women, but the one woman I know and love best is my mom, and I decided to take a story about her and create a book and a play and a whole lot more, and yes, it's called The God Box.
That's so awesome. I share that. I'm very close to my mother, who is still living, both my mother and father. My mother's
so great.
86, and knock on wood, still in good health. And we've had so much fun over the years. In fact, just a funny thing about my mom that I'll share is that my mother didn't learn to drive till she was 40.
Mm.
And she finally wanted her independence to go out and work. So she got her driver's license and went out into the workforce. And I just think that she was a very independent woman from her era, is all I have to tell you. And right now, my mother drives a 280ZX. It is it's really a kind of a muffle car. And my mother is only 5'2" and weighs about, at this point, 108 pounds. And I think she will never part with that car because it was a symbol of her independence. How about your mom? When did she start driving?
You know, I don't know what age she started driving. We grew up in Philadelphia in the city, so we didn't really have to drive. But she worked, also a woman ahead of her time in my neighborhood. She was one of the only moms who both took care of us and worked outside the house. She was a secretary, as they were called then, in the Mad Men advertising days of the 50s and 60s. And so she loved to drive and be on her own and go shopping. And so that was her reason for driving, too. Yeah, and I don't know if she was a late bloomer. I was a late bloomer. I didn't learn to drive until I was 19. And I always thought, you know, guys would drive me around. But I did want to transfer colleges, and that was my motivation to get myself a little red Volkswagen 68 Beetle and putt my way to a new school.
Oh, wow. My first new car was also a Volkswagen. It was my first brand new, not the first car I ever drove, but my first brand new car I ever owned was a Volkswagen. How about that?
Hmm.
74. It was bright orange.
Oh, wow.
But I noticed in the photograph, which I love, of your mom and yourself and your brother, that it looks like the family car was a Chevy. It looks like a 52 or 53 Chevy. Yeah.
I even asked the question on your site. I hope someone looks at it and tells me. I think it's a 1952. I don't know why that's in my memory, Chevy. And in that picture, I love it because Mom looks so at ease, and she's sitting in the passenger seat, you know, out the door. My brother, who at that age, he looks like he's about a year and a half, maybe a little more, is on her lap, the way a boy does, playing with the car features. And I'm on the floor in the back looking very solemn, as if I am Mom's partner in crime, which is exactly what I was.
That's so cute. Yeah, my father almost always wanted a Chevrolet. That was just his thing. And I come from a family of all daughters. There's no boys in our family. And I was kind of my dad's pal. And so we would ride around the car together. And one day, because this is long before seatbelts were mandatory in vehicles, I believe this was a 1954 or 55, similar to this, the car in your picture, I decided just to open the door and I fell out. I did hang on to the door handle and got terrible asphalt burn on my behind, which I'll never live down. That's a very famous family story. I just couldn't sit still, I guess. tell me some of the adventures you had with your family in the car and what that means to you. Cars to me are such a big part of our lifestyle, you know, and with our moms, family vacations.
I have so many car memories in our family. I can remember our family wasn't kind of the traditional family in the sense that we did, I think, adventurous things when we were little. My parents and as many kids would go to drive-ins, and I remember going in the Rambler, and it was pale yellow with wood sides. And my brother and I are in the back in our little PJs, and Mom and Dad didn't take us to Bambi. They took us to see Psycho. And I can remember when the wheelchair skeleton whipped around in the attic, and our heads hit the ceiling, and my parents laughed their brains out. I mean, that is so clear in my mind. And I can remember another one, and this is my mom in a car. We had a Chevy Impala, and it was pale yellow on the bottom, and it's when they came out with the vinyl tops. Do you remember that?
I do.
So it was a black top. We were so chic, we thought. So Mom took me to the orthodontist. So that means I was about 13. And we went into the doctor's office. We came out into the parking lot, which was in a shopping mall. Mom and I got into the car, talking like we always did, you know, chat, chat, chat. And Mom turned on the ignition and drove about a foot forward with the most grinding, horrible sound. We got out. Someone had taken the tires off our car. So she was driving the wheel. Metal wheel thing.
Oh, the rims.
Oh, my God. And my dad said, Mary, how could you not notice your car had no tires when you got into it? And we're like, well, we were talking. That's the way we were. We were just so bonded. Like, who cares what's happening in the world?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a lot of fun stories. My parents, as we grew as a family, we always had a station wagon to cart ourselves around, and we did a lot of road trips in those Chevy station wagons always. And we had friends that also went on vacation with us almost every year, and they always had a Ford station wagon, and it was the battle of the Ford and the Chevy, right? It was really and my dad, you know, he's a typical man, point A to point B. But when you have five women in the car and also the other family had two women, you got to make a lot of pit stops for us girls, you know. So we have a funny thing that we always say about my dad, that all the pictures have a green blur on them because he wouldn't stop at all the places we wanted to stop to take photographs. There's always a green blur. So tell me a little bit more about your new book, The God Box. I was so moved by your presentation, and I want our listeners to know a little bit more about the book so that they'll go out and enjoy just this heartfelt story that you've written about your mother. And tell us a little bit more about your mom. She sounds like such a character.
She was a character. She was a redhead, and for what that says about a personality, she really was kind of the vivacious, radiant spitfire of a woman, but very, very compassionate and empathetic. And because of that, she always noticed people's worries. You know, people came to her like she was a magnet, and they'd tell her, oh, I don't know if I'm going to get this job, or I'm worried about my health, or whatever it was. And so Mom adopted this little ritual called the God Box. And the idea was she would take any old box and a scrap of paper. And when I say scrap, I mean the checkout receipt in her purse, the paper towel on the kitchen counter, whatever. And she'd date it and write, "Dear God, you know, please let so-and-so get out of the hospital. Love, Mary." And she would fold it and put it in the box and let it go. And the whole idea was surrendering your hopes and your wishes to a stronger hands. So that was just something that she did. And if you were in there, Jody, she would have said, "Jody, you're in my God box," you know. And it made people feel like somebody cared. It made her feel like she could go through life without so many worries on her shoulders.
It's really a great thing to be such a caring person and personalize it so much. I know there was one story that you told about the woman who used to clean for her. Can you share that story? I love that story.
It was her friend Lisa. And Lisa, we call her Lisa with the one rag, because when Mom and Dad were retired in Fort Myers, Florida, and Mom was, let's say, in her 70s, you know, and Dad was older than she. And so Lisa came to clean the house. And whenever she came, she'd come with one little cloth, one little rag. And Mom would say, "How is she going to clean the whole house with this one little rag?" But Lisa had so many things that she shared with Mom. Mom just loved her to bits. And it was really because of all of these people that she loved, you know, the waitress in the Cracker Barrel, the fella next door who had a wife in a wheelchair, so many people, plus us, her, you know, Jack and me and her, my dad, that she started this God box. But it wasn't until she died, which was 6 years ago, that I discovered that there was not just one, but there were 10 boxes filled with 20 years of everything my mother ever prayed for, wished for, worried about. It was just beautiful.
Sort of a collage of her life, right?
Her life, our life, strangers' lives, you know, like more than a diary. It was just what a mom keeps in her heart and on her shoulders and just how much she loves, and funny things and serious things. They were all mixed together and written in the most casual tone you have ever heard. That's what made them fun, like funny and touching.
You know, my mother's name is Mary, too. We have a lot in common.
Mm.
And one of the things that my mother does, they're very devout Christians. My parents are Presbyterians, right? And they have a prayer list at church. And that's their God box. They submit the names of people that they're concerned or prayerful about or worried
mm-hmm.
about. And they live in Palm Desert now. My dad's going to be 89 this year. And when I go, I attend church with them, and I always open up the program to see who's on the prayer list. And, you know, two of my children are continuously in that, and it comforts me, right? It comforts me that this is how they're handling it. And by the way, they're not worried people. They have a lot of joy of living, and maybe that's the whole thing about the God box, this ability to let go, right? Isn't
right.
that what
and
that's all about?
Yeah, and it's everyday life. It doesn't have to be the giant, sad, awful, scary things of life. You know, it's the little things. I mean, Mom put in there, "Please let the Pergo floor be the right choice." She even had in there for a car, "Drive with confidence," which was just asking, "Please let me be confident, you know, when I'm driving down here in Florida." So I think what's wonderful about it is integrating the little and the big things of life and love into your prayers. And in her case, you know, putting them in the box and feeling that once in there, she could feel confident that whatever worked out, and she would say, "If you think it's right, whatever would work out," she was accepting, and she could move on and help other people. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing.
You know, I've heard the use of the God box before in and around 12-step programs for the same reason, to help us not worry so much.
Yeah.
Because
I wonder, you know, she got the idea from a woman who came to her and saw how much Mom was taking on everybody's troubles, and she said, "Have you ever heard of a God box?" And I always wondered, is that where that woman got the idea? Because that is a place that I have heard others come to me after performance and say that to me about the 12-step program.
Yeah, I think it's a really bad habit to be a worrier, right? And as moms, and I, you know, I'm a mom, and you're a mom, right?
No, I don't have any children. I just worry about
children.
Everybody else.
Everybody else. Well, you know, worry is a bad habit. I can tell you that. As a mom myself of three kids, and no matter how old they get, you still worry. I think it's just a great personal practice. And I had a very dear friend who was much older than I, and she said to me, "You know, Jody, you get to worry all you want. One day a month." I went, "What?" She said, "Take all your worries, worry all for 24 hours, and then let them go. Because otherwise, unless you could do something about it, you're wasting your energy." And, you know, that was a very good piece of advice. And it's sort of like the God box. You just put it in there and then, you know, you did your thing, right?
That's
you don't have to worry about that anymore. And that's really a good thing. And I'm cracking up about your comment about your mother not wanting to worry about her driving. And although my mother is a very good driver, she was always kind of a tense driver. In fact, she would sit very close to the steering wheel and grip the steering wheel a little bit. And she was always really uptight, and that always bugged my dad. And it was really funny. When she drove and he was sitting in the passenger seat for any reason, like even as sometimes his health would deteriorate and she'd have to drive in the doctor, and she hated that because he would say stuff like, "Relax and don't turn there," like, and that would even make her more nervous. And I just think it's really funny.
I think my mom, she was a good driver, never had a ticket or anything like that, and yet she was not a confident driver. And she would say, "Am I doing the right thing? Or is that person getting too close to me?" And, you know, that fearfulness she felt bad about, because she wanted to be able to do something in an emergency or just, you know, drive around Florida or do whatever. But she did start to slack off with her driving just because of that fear. It's a shame when that happens, because it's such a key to independence.
Actually, a few years ago, my mother had a torn retina and had to have multiple surgeries to repair them. And during that time, they revoked her driver's license. She was devastated. She was devastated. But I want to tell you that she went through a lot of surgeries and retook her driving test about a year ago and got her driver's license back. And I'm telling you, she celebrated as if she had won the lotto. Because I think to a lot of women and people, the ability to drive and be independent is, you know, really important. Really, and especially in this day and age, you know, women's independence and empowerment has become a big topic, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I can remember actually when there was a time when my dad was in the hospital for a couple of days, and my mom made an audio recording during that time. And one of the things that she was talking about, she was talking to Dad, but also to herself. And she said, "I'm so angry with myself that I'm afraid to drive. I should be driving over to that hospital to be with you. And instead, I have to ask people to take me." And it just ate at her. And she said, "I have to fight this. I'm going to get better." And she'd make promises and to not be afraid. And I love that she had the determination and the courage, even, you know, in her late 70s, because she was a good driver. But, you know, you just need encouragement. You really do. And I used to have her drive me sometimes. I'll say, "You drive. I'll sit in the passenger seat. And I love you driving. Go ahead," you know. But she liked it when I drove around shopping.
So what did this mean to you, writing the book? On a personal note, I know your mom is almost seems bigger than life to me after watching you reenact the book. But for you personally, was it like a catharsis for you to write the book and you know, sort of a memorial to your mom? Or what is it that the message that you want people to receive from the writings?
It was cathartic. It still is. You know, writing the book, the first thing that was on my mind is that I wanted to do such a good job for my mom. I mean, writing about her and knowing this would be the book that would tell her story, I put a lot of pressure on myself to do the best I could. But I also, it's hard because you have to go back and dig emotionally into the places where I lost her, because I talk about that in the book and reflect back on lessons I learned from discoveries in the box, and also losing my dad, which happened 4 years later. So writing the book did that for me, to the point that I probably cried most days, I have to admit, and And then I decided to do the one-woman play, which is what you saw, Jody. And that is even more of an emotional scouring, you know, of what you have inside. But the good part of doing that is a couple things. One, other people say, gee, just like you are, that reminds me of my mom and how much I love her. Or if I didn't have such a good thing, there was that. There was this memory that I recall. And people saying, I'm going to start my own God box because Mary just taught me a lesson. So it was worth it. And I feel closer to her and to my dad for going through this project. But it's not for the timid of heart to decide to write what you hope will be a motivating, moving book about the people you love best.
Well, it certainly is, though. I mean, it is, you know, I shared a copy of the book with my own daughter for Mother's Day. Thank you
for
the signed copy. And she cried. And I have a very loving relationship with my daughter. And of course, I have two sons, too, and they all remembered me on Mother's Day.
Yay,
of course. And, of course, I remembered my mom. And, you know, we're a very close family. But I think that, you know, one of the things that the takeaways for me is this whole idea of appreciation that you're showing your mother by remembering her. And because time is short. And it's close to my heart because my mother is getting older. And, you know, time is short with her. In fact, I have been vacationing a lot with my parents the last few years because I always feel like it's just precious time right now with them. And I so respect that. So let's get back to some of the fun that you had with your mom over the years. I know you have a lot of fun stories about things that you did together. Why don't you share some of the happy times that you can remember from the book?
Yeah, well, you know, in the book I talk about, you know, growing up with her, since she was working in advertising, which I eventually did as well. But I can remember her when we were little. She really was more at home in the office than the kitchen. She was not a huge cook, to say the least. And she would cook ahead on Sunday nights for the whole week. And so my brother and I, we would come home to thaw something out for dinner, which is pretty much where dinner was. It was in the freezer. And we'd open it and see these Tupperware containers that would say, you know, those peel-off name tags you get in the office for meetings. Hi, my name is Meatballs. Hi, I'm Macaroni and Cheese. You know, that's what she stuck on to tell us what was what in the freezer. It was so cute. And the other thing she did, which I thought was really fun, and it took me a long time to learn this one, she would not stay in a job where she was unhappy. And she was a temporary secretary, so she did have that flexibility. But if she showed up at a job and she didn't like it, and by not like it, that meant the people were being mean to her, she would call my dad at 10:30 that first morning to say, Ray, come pick me up. I'm leaving. These people are mean. I'm not coming back. And he would take her at lunchtime and right home. And she quit and never go back. I mean, that's just such, you know, guts. I feel like I was such a wimp. I did not have the nerve to do that for years, you know, and she could do it on a dime. And the reason was my mother treasured her life with her family and the love and happiness that she shared, and she was not going to let someone take it away for, you know, whatever they were paying her. She figured, I'll get another job. You know, I can't keep this anxiety. So she really did live a life where she was conscious of the importance of, you know, focusing on the things of life that matter.
Absolutely. You have to treasure every day. You know, I'm curious, since we're talking about moms and cars, what kind of car do you drive? yeah, I know you live in New York, so maybe you don't even drive that much.
No, we do.
Well, New Yorkers...
we have a house in Pennsylvania that we've had since 1986, and actually Mom and Dad stayed here every summer for 20 years. I found 3 God boxes in this house as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we needed to get a car. The first 7 years we didn't have a car because we were little new to New Yorker people, and thought, wow, you can, you know, get around. You don't need one. But once we had our little escape, we knew we needed a car. So we sort of graduated. We started with a Toyota Celica, which was used. I forget, it cost about $1,000. And then we graduated to a Mazda. And then that was when I used to think that those commercials was like a little animal running around to make it go. I don't know why I thought that, but it was cute. And then we worked our way through. We've had, right now we have an Acura. It's about 6 years old that Joe really likes because it's like a super safety record car. And then we have a Lexus. I never know the numbers. It's a WAGA, not a hybrid, but it's like a car chassis, but it's SUV-ish on the top.
Okay.
It's real nice, R350 or something like that. But I really love that car. I never had even anything resembling an SUV before, and I am now addicted to how many flowers and stuff I can put in the back if Joe would get his golf clubs out of the way. And then we bought, and we probably bought this one, at least 10 or 12 years ago, a used BMW convertible. So it's a little 1996 cute little blue, and I have my initials on the driver's side and Joe's initials on the passenger side. And when we got this car, Mom, of course, was alive and Dad was here, and I thought, Mom is going to love a convertible because we never had a convertible in our life. And it was pale blue, the navy roof, so cute. So we wanted to take her to Jimmy's for ice cream as a drive-in. I said, Mom, we're going to take you in the convertible. And she's like, I don't like wind in my face and in my hair. So she sat in the back seat of this little teeny convertible and put an afghan totally over her head all the way down to, like, the ground, like a blanket wrapped around like a mummy. She looked like Cousin It the whole way to Jimmy's ice cream. I said, so much for the glamour of the redhead in a convertible. She's just, when will this be over? So that's my car memory of Mom and that one. But we always gave Mom and Dad our cars. After we had them for 4 years or five, Joe and I always would give our cars to my parents because they were safer than the cars they were driving. So they had a lot of years in a used Legend or a used Acura and felt very glamorous among their Florida neighbors with their snazzy hand-me-down kid cars.
Except for the convertible. I'll bet you didn't hand that one
down. No, I didn't give that. Nobody wanted that.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, my mom and dad now, my mother, they have a Toyota Avalon. And you know, they're not driving long distances much anymore. In fact, their Avalon is like 12 years old, and it has like 80,000 miles on it only. And so they don't drive long distances much anymore. I'm their travel Sherpa, so I do the driving for them. But that her 280ZX is parked in the garage. It's in primo condition. In fact, it's 27 years old, and it has less than 100,000 miles on it. And it's actually part of her will of who's going to get it. We don't know yet because by now
I hope the Sherpa.
It's like a piece of jewelry to her, right? She's going to bequeath it to someone as a classic to enjoy herself. So just the funniest thing. And my dad, this is the funny part. My dad will take them to the side and say, "We just saw that car. I need more room in the garage. We don't need that car." Just over Mom's dead body, and that's really the truth.
She's
not parting with it. She is not in this life. So I think it's just funny how, you know, cars and things, you know, are part of our lifestyle. I always say that, you know, when you buy a car, and I'm sure you feel this way, it's kind of a reflection of who you are and the stage of life you're in. And like you said about your parents driving around in their snazzy cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really part of that. And I have a lot of fond memories of car stuff because, like you, the drive-in movies were really super big during our era.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad would take the station wagon and then back it up and then put the, you know, it had a tailgate and we would all pile into the back of the, and then set up chairs because it was quite warm here in Southern California and go to the movies. Never scary ones though. I always got the Disney G rated. I'm jealous.
Not us.
I'm so jealous.
It was either that or Sophia Loren. I always said my mother didn't like a movie if somebody wasn't dead or in bed in the first 5 minutes. So that's what we watched, too.
So
but it is funny what you said about car, you know, like the car reflecting the time in life. I remember when I was in college, my dad was really the one who was the buyer of the cars. He was so good with cars, and man, he could sell a car for more than he bought it. He was so he looked like a cross between a doctor and a priest. I mean, you know what I mean? He had this very clean face with white hair and very tall and kind and polite and well-spoken, and people just trusted him because he was so good at it. And he had an Emilio Pucci, I remember, Lincoln, I think. It was huge. And that's when I took my driver's test in. I'm like, going to drive a Volkswagen. Why didn't I take the parallel parking test in a little teeny-weeny Beetle? But no, no, no. I had to take it in that giant living room of a car. I can remember
Land yacht, we call it.
Yeah, land yacht, yeah. But, you know, the other part of that actually harkens back to the God Box. My mom kept the God Box, and it was really her way of dealing with things. And I didn't pick up doing it until my dad was diagnosed with cancer and was dying. And my dad, who loved his cars and drove all the way through age 91, I remember taking him for the MRI, which would turn out to determine that he had brain cancer. And even then, and he had strokes and everything, he was in the passenger seat, I was driving, and there he was pointing, turn left, turn right, you know, in Florida, where was the MRI place? He had never been to it, but he had a huge sense of direction. He was a great, great driver. And so I think also of that, you know, that up until the very end, he was still determined, he was still the dad, and the car was the symbol, you know, of being dad. And it was really with his death that I, for the first time, wrote something in the God Box, which was asking God and my mom to take care of dad, you know, because I knew I couldn't do it. He was dying, and I couldn't stop it. And it was a huge catharsis, as you said earlier, but also a loving relief, as if mom said, now you understand about surrender.
Yes, yes. I definitely understand. And part of my story, and many of our of the listeners know this, that I have a son who's a paraplegic. And he was actually diagnosed with MS, and as a result of his hands not working properly, had a very serious car accident. He went off a very steep canyon and didn't die. And during that period of time, I definitely had to reckon with the fact, like in death, that things are changing. I had to accept my new son. I always say, I got a new son out of the deal.
Wow.
And it was really about letting go of my old son and welcoming the new son in his new form. He is completely a changed person. And I want to add, for the better, because in these challenges of life, you have a choice to be bitter or better.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'll crack you up so we all don't get too sad. He is going skydiving on May 24th.
Oh, my gosh.
And he is an avid skier. He skis in a special program for paraplegics and does whitewater rafting, surfing, all special programs, and has started his own 501(c). He definitely is a change. I always say I got a better son. He has really devoted himself to helping others live life. You can still live life no matter what your disability is. I'm so proud of him. He should write a book.
He should. What a beautiful story. He must be such a man. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, I really think
so many people, things happen, and not anything big as you're describing with your son, but even just the dings and little bumps of life, and you can spend a lot of time being angry. And why did that happen to me? And looking over your shoulder, what if? That doesn't matter, you know? And I think that I know what mom taught me, and obviously what you know in your family and in your soul, as does your son, is that it's who am I now? Where can I take this to make it better? And accepting that this is what was meant to be for some reason, and I'm now going to go forward with new energy. And it sounds, maybe it sounds Pollyanna, or it sounds like, gee, it's, you know, but they're not easy for you to say, and look what you just said. So I think that something like a God Box or something where you're able to let go of those things that you cannot control and take on life with new vigor is, I don't know, makes life worthwhile.
Yeah, I like the word surrender because that's really what it is. It's, it, you know, at that moment, and I remember the day where, you know, I felt as if I had a hole in my soul the size of a telephone pole going through my chest,
mm-hmm.
and the cold wind was blowing through it. And I said, Jody, you can't live this way every day. You've got to do something so that you can move forward. This is not going to change, you know, this situation, right? How do you accept this and move forward? And it was really, and I knew what to do. It was getting to that point of, you know, and in some ways it's almost a survival thing. Like, I don't want to go down that other road, right? And,
that's right.
And sink into the abyss.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, some people sink into the abyss over, you know, a broken nail. But, you have to surrender and say, I have no control over that. I have no control over that. So I'm gonna surrender and move forward and really, because life really is about living.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And mm-hmm. I think your mom, she had it down to artwork, right? She had it down to artwork. You know, all her sense of humor and her generosity of spirit and caring for so many people. I'll bet she had 1,000 people at her memorial service.
Oh, so, and they all said they were her best friend because she made them feel that way, because that's how much she cared about them. It was just beautiful to see the number of people she affected. And I still find people, like in this little Pennsylvania town, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, who said, I loved your mother. You know, she did something for me that really changed me. And that just makes me thrilled, you know, to know that she, as just a regular person, had this huge effect. And that's why the book is exciting, because I feel like, well, maybe this can help continue what she did in life.
What a legacy.
And, you know, giving the money to charity, too. So it's not, you know, to make money off mom's
capacity. Oh, wow. And so where can our listeners purchase the God Box so that they can share in celebrating with you the gift that she gave and her story and your story? Where can they purchase the book?
Well, they can go on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or go into the Barnes & Noble stores. All 700 of them are featuring the God Box right now, which is great because it's doing really well. They could also go on my website, thegodboxproject.com, and there's videos. There's even little videos of mom on there. There's all kinds of stuff, and I hope that they would check that out. And we're on Facebook at The God Box Project. And I'm doing the play, as you mentioned, and in the fall we'll be doing it always to raise money for cancer, hospice care, and, you know, other local causes. So this message, as it goes forward, whether it's the book or the play, can have a ripple effect to help other families who've gone through what we're going through. So it's a very satisfying thing, and it makes me close to mom. I dream about her all the time, and I'm grateful for that.
The wonderful mission that you're on. I have the ultimate respect for what you're doing, Mary Lou. Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO, Just Ask a Woman, and author of The God Box. What a wonderful guest you have been to celebrate moms for May. And sharing all of the car stories and all the lovely features of the new book. I think I'm going to rush out and get a God Box today. I need one.
it's a good idea. You can just take any old box and get yourself a pretty one, but just give it a shot. Anybody writes one little message, they might just find it's the ticket to a lot more peace of mind.
One more time. You can find out more about Mary Lou Quinlan and The God Box at www.thegodboxproject.com. Thank you again, Mary Lou, for being my guest. It was certainly a pleasure having you. I wish you well in your travels, and I'm sure my listeners will be looking you up soon to get that book.
Oh, I wish you well, Jody. You do a great service for women everywhere. I just love what you do. Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show. Well, that's it for our May Moms, Celebrating Moms and Cars with Ask Patty and the Automotive Advice for Women radio show. See you next month.
Hey.
You've been listening to Ask Patty, Automotive Advice for Women. The Ask Patty Show is a Boomer in the Bay production.